Hello and welcome to the bonus Q&A session of the Advanced SCD Techniques course. I'm Jordan Reisner, and I'm here tonight with my friend and compadre, Steve Wright. I just want to say thanks to those of you that submitted questions. We're going to attempt to get through all of them. We have a heck of a list here. But then when we're done going through all the submitted questions, we'll be taking live Q&A. So be ready with any additional questions that you have, and we'll get to those at the end. First, I want to run through a little disclaimer. You've been through the first couple weeks of the course, and we got a couple things we want to go over. And I just want to remind you, you know, that we aren't doctors. We're just engineers. We're always learning and trying to do better and be better people and share the best knowledge that we can have with you all. So, you know, we work really hard to find the truth for us and for you. And we would never knowingly give you bad advice. But, you know, what I do want to say is that we work with doctors and we want to encourage you to do the same, especially when you're using any prescription drugs. So, you know, doctors are trained in prescription drugs, and they understand them much better than we do. So please strive to work with one and do your own due diligence before believing or trying anything we say regarding supplements or prescription drugs. And, in fact, if you need some scripts to help you out, stay tuned for week 6 where we go over those in detail and talk to you about how to talk to your doctor that makes them respect you a little more. So, all right, now with that out of the way, I want to get to some of the great questions we have lined up tonight. So we'll have time again for live Q&A at the end. First up, we have Michelle. Steve, are you ready to rock, man?
Yeah, dude, let's do this.
All right, all right. Well, I'm going to get rolling. This is from Michelle, like I said. Now, this is a six-parter, man. So I'm going to cut through, and I'm just going to pitch you one at a time, and we'll just keep rolling. Starts off, hi, Steve and Jordan. The second week session is great, and now my son is testing Scodophilus 3+, which is 3 billion CFUs, and he's taking 4 of those a day. All your tips and information are so helpful, and I see some progress with conditions already. So far, his progress has been reduced BMs. Yesterday, he had just 3 BMs and no bleeding since yesterday morning. It used to be 6 to 9 a day, all 7s with bleeding often. That's awesome, awesome results so far. Some texture of the BMs changed. He's even had a type 5 twice. Very exciting. We went back to type 7 or 6 since he didn't do well with spinach. We're still working on gaining weight. And he's also having BMs between 3 and 5 a.m. He is taking Scodophilus 3+ and a dose of enzymes 2 per meal. So the first question is, when he tries new veggies and fruits, it doesn't work out. He has D with blood, etc. How many days should I wait to move on to the next new veggie or fruit? Take it away, man.
Okay, that's a great question. But first off, Michelle, I just want to say that's awesome progress. If in 2 weeks you went from, you know, that many bowel movements, 6 to 9 a day, down to 3, and the blood is disappearing, that's awesome in 2 weeks. So awesome progress, and just want to keep doing what we're doing. So with this, it's a great question. It happens to a lot of people. Normally you want to wait until the symptoms stabilize again. So this can usually, it's usually 1 to 2 days, could be up to 3 to 4 days. But in other words, you want to wait until the symptoms were right before you introduced the new food. So if he was down to 3 to 4 movements a day with no blood, you want to kind of wait till his symptoms stabilize back to that prior point and then start the reintroduction. Just like everything, there's always cases that have to break the rules and break the molds. And one of them is in this area does deal with children and the beginning parts of the diet. And this is only if your child just can't handle a really restricted diet and he needs to eat some other foods because, you know, it's either he's going to go off the diet, you're going to go crazy or something like that. So if that's the case, try to wait as long as you can as the symptoms start to stabilize, but add something in if that's the case. So like I said, to sum it up, basically you want to wait 2 to 4 days, try to get his symptoms back to stabilized before the introduction that didn't work.
All right, man, good answer. I think you got everything. I'm going to keep rolling to number 2. She says, I took out dairy, including SCD yogurt, nuts, eggs, and unlimited fruits up to 3 cups a day, and also took out bananas. When could he start testing these foods?
Okay, so this is a great question. It basically deals with the four horsemen is what you talked about there. And I know it's frustrating right now because a lot of people want to eat those foods, but he's definitely not in his food safe zone yet. He's not in his feel-good zone yet either. So what that means from the food safe zone is that he doesn't have a group of foods, however small they might be or however monotonous. He can't really just rely on them to have no blood and, you know, pretty good poops, and, you know, he's not waking up and having D and that kind of thing. So that needs to be your first focus, is to find that food safe zone. And then what you're going to find after that is your feel-good zone, where he knows that now he can rely on these supplements and these foods to feel pretty good every day. And at that point, that's the point when you want to possibly start looking at the four horsemen, such as dairy, nuts, eggs, up in the fruits, and things like banana or spinach that he might already had trouble with. So in the meantime, work on just regular fruits and veggies, and keep working on the oils. Test out other supplements like betaine, HDL, or digestive enzymes. But the first priority should always be to figure out the food safe zone.
That's a good point, man. The only thing I'll add, you know, since he's already taking enzymes, you know, go back and check out the week 2 information on betaine, HCL, and low stomach acid. It might be a good candidate for that. It might be that taking that tweak might put him right into having a feel good zone, you know, or at least a food safe zone to start off with. So I think that would be a step in the right direction before looking at the four horsemen for sure. So, all right, let's roll on to number 3 here. She says he often goes pee at night 1 to 2 times between 2 to 5 a.m. every night and 1 b.m. between 3 and 5 a.m. Is this because he still has a yeast issue? He still has a lightly coated white tongue.
You know, honestly, this could be like a number of things. Yeast is not the first thing that would come to my mind, although you did throw in the lightly coated white tongue, so that's kind of an indication that it could be thrush and be related to a systematic yeast issue. But I still don't see how that would really relate to the nighttime waking up and going to the bathroom. So I wouldn't be so worried about that at that point. Maybe try to reduce any liquids 1 to 2 hours before bed. Try to keep them as low as possible. Definitely try not to eat a couple hours before bed. You know, try to eat at, like, say, 6 p.m. and go to bed at 8 p.m. or 9 p.m., something like that. And, again, I think this will kind of handle itself as well as you get to your field or your food safe zone, as long as you're, you know, start upping the probiotics to get to 30 to 40 billion CFUs and, you know, test the stomach acid. I think that's going to help out.
That's a perfect segue to the next question. She says, he's taking Scodophilus 3+, and I'm giving him 1 pill plus water first thing in the morning, 1 in the mid-morning, 1 in the mid-afternoon, and 1 right before he goes to bed, total of 4 pills. I tried 2 pills first thing in the morning, but it didn't go well. Or maybe that D had nothing to do with it. Is it okay to spread like that, or should he take 2 things first in the morning and then 2 at night before bed? Do I need to increase it if he is taking it well?
Okay, so this is a great question. And actually, most people do fine just taking the pills as soon as they wake up or as soon as they go to bed, no matter what the dosage is or how many pills they have to take. But you do, you know, you still have to test everything, and you do want to ramp up slowly. But like I was just talking about, you're giving him 12 billion CFUs a day right now with the 4 servings of the 3-plus Scodophilus. I would like to see you test the 2 pills in the morning again and 2 pills at night. Just because you have D once, when that happens, that could have been due to a food thing or anything else. So I would test it again. It's just like kind of how we talk about testing foods. You know, you got to continue to test it. And D can be related to so many things other than just the 1 pill change. So from the science and everything, it's best to take them 30 minutes before breakfast and at least 2 hours after dinner. So I would try to go back to just the 2 serving thing. And then when your 3-plus Scodophilus run out, I would look to get the 10 billion CFUs, and then that'll be easier to ramp up to the 30 to 40 billion CFUs. But you don't need to wait. You know, like I said, you're taking 12 billion right now. I would try changing first the dosing schedule to 2 in the morning, 2 at night. Everything should go well, and then slowly start to add, you know, a pill in the morning and night until you get up to at least 30 billion.
All right, nice work. Next part is he's struggling to gain weight. He's lost about 5 pounds when he's already pretty lean. What should I start to introduce first so that he could gain more weight, i.e. avocado, more coconut oil, etc.? Eat salmon, baked, boiled, pan-fried chicken, pork ribs, turkey or pork sausages for meat, and applesauce. Butternut, buttercup, squash for fruit or veggie so far. Spinach and pear sauce failed.
Okay, this is a question we get quite often. And the unfortunate thing is I wouldn't focus on the weight right now. That's not the immediate issue. When you have anybody who is not digesting food, you're still going to the bathroom quite regularly, they're not perfect poops. First thing is we've got to make sure that the food he is eating is being absorbed and being used, you know, either for weight gain or muscle gain or whatever it might be. We want to make sure that the malabsorption and malnutrition is not happening. So that's the first thing is, again, get back to the feel-good zone and the food-safe zone. So, I think this is another scenario where you'd want to try the betaine HCL. If you're looking to, you know, start to up the calories right away, I would hope that because weight is an issue for him that you are at least tracking his calories on a daily basis. You know, make sure he's getting at least 2,000, maybe 2,500 if you can bump him up that much. The first thing, I guess, to add out of the things you asked about were coconut oil. That's the first thing I would add. But again, as long as his calories at a decent level, the first thing to really focus on here is that the food he is eating is getting absorbed.
I think that's a good distinction, man. And I don't know if really quick you want to just recap for her how she would even know if he's getting the decent amount of calories.
Yeah, that's a great point. We talked about in our book, actually, I think it's chapter 3 or 4, where you would go to some online calculators, plug in the age and height and that kind of thing, and just kind of figure out a rough guesstimate. So for men, especially a growing almost teenager, I'm assuming that's going to be 1,800 to 2,500. And obviously, if you're talking about a weight issue, you always want to err on the high side. When it comes to digestive diseases, usually we all have a lot of inflammation. Inflammation eats calories. Food passing through that's being malabsorbed is a waste of calories because we're not actually getting into our bloodstream, right? Because that's what matters. It's not what we eat. It's what we actually absorb into our bloodstream. So that's where everyone should start. And then using fitday.com to track the portion sizes or even just a regular, you know, pen and paper and add up the portion sizes, maybe using something like nutritiondata.com just to, you know, practice it for 1 or 2 weeks if you've never done it before. That way you start to learn the sizes and portion sizes of meat and veggies and that type of thing. And then I think after that, most people can kind of guesstimate roughly the area of calories that they need to get per day.
Awesome, man. I think that's a great distinction. I think the big thing is, and we talk a lot about this in week 5 of the course, is that, you know, it's not about the calories. As long as you're getting, you know, baseline calories, when you're that lean, the best way you're going to be able to gain weight is through a little weight training. So you can learn more about that in week 5, and we go into deep detail on that. So, all right, I'm going to roll on to the next one. This is the final part of Michelle's question. She says, I started to give 2 capsules of enzymes with every meal from yesterday on every meal, and his BM was reduced to 3 from usually 6 to 8 trips. He can take the enzyme 1 to 5 caps per meal. How do you know what is the right amount per meal? Should I slowly increase until D is clear, or should I just take 2 pills per meal for now?
Okay, so when it comes to enzymes, there's really no upper limit, but we usually see the most effective dose as far as like the results we can notice as well as the amount you spend on the pills to be right around 2 per meal for most people. Either that or most people are at 1 per meal if they're a smaller person or don't have as much problems. However, because he saw such a great improvement when you went up to 2 caps per meal, you might want to try 3 just to see how it goes. If you don't notice any changes, go back down to 2 and see if there's any changes at that point, because again, we don't want to be taking pills that we don't need. So 2 is usually the most effective dose. If he's gone down to 3 at this point, I would keep him right there. three BMs per day. I'd keep them at the two caps and then maybe try three the next couple days. But again, check out the betaine HCL if he's not taking any corticosteroids. And then, you know, go back and keep reviewing the week two stuff and just keep plugging away trying to find his feel-good zone. So.
Excellent, man. I think you nailed it. I think that wraps up Michelle's question.
Okay, cool. Thanks, Michelle. That was a huge multi-parter. But we're going to roll on here, Jordan. I got one coming up for you from Laura. So she asked, in session one, when you're talking about the feel-good zone and how it simplifies your life, you said it, referring to the feel-good zone, makes adding new foods and new variables easy at that point. In fact, when you get to that plateau of the feel-good zone, the timeline goes out the window. End quote. Does that really mean I don't have to follow the phases, she wants to know. What does that change? And what about being in a solid plateau changes the necessity of adding foods in a particular order? This is a great question, man, and I think you're going to nail it. So what you got for Laura?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. At first, we really have to make a distinction, which is that the feel-good zone is not a food safe zone. I know that's probably nuts that we named them so similarly, but just remember that a food safe zone is a small group of simple foods that you can fall back to and know that you're not going to have any negative symptoms. So like if you're coming up to, say you got to take a dose of antibiotics, or you've got a big event where you don't want to deal with any stomach problems, or you've got a colonoscopy or something big, you know, something stressful coming, you can fall back on this food safe zone and you know that you're not going to have any symptoms. Now, the feel-good zone, that means that you're feeling good, but you've already introduced quite a bit of foods in the phases. So you have a good array of foods that you're eating that all make you feel good. Now, at this point, you know, you're probably eating phase three or four foods anyways, so that's where we talk about how timelines go out the window. And what I'm talking about is, like, if you wanted to try some raw fruit or raw veggies and see how that goes, or if you love coffee, you want to bring coffee back in, or whatever it may be, because you're already eating most of the phases and feeling pretty good, that's why the timelines really go out the window, because they don't really have any purpose at that point. Now, remember that the phases are just guidelines of foods in order of the ease of digestion. So once you're in the feel-good zone, feel free to keep using the phases, but just know that your healing is going well and you don't really necessarily need to be so concerned about the baby steps on foods. But my assumption is that, you know, you may still need to be focused on the food safe zone, which is just finding a group of foods that will actually stop all your symptoms. And once you get to that point, then you can work on expanding things and moving up to the feel-good zone, which is a higher level of healing. So I hope I confused the crap out of everybody. Steve, did I get everything you think?
I think you did a great job confusing everyone and then simplifying it. The only thing I'd add is that I think maybe one point that we didn't highlight enough when we just talked about this as well as when we taught it is that the reason why the timelines would go out the window once you're in your feel-good zone, is that we advocate testing everything. Nothing is considered sacred. Nothing is considered safe. Everything is subject to a four-day test. So even though the timeline goes out the window, the four-day test does not go out the window. And the reason why the timeline goes out is because you already know how to feel good every day. And so you could choose a phase four food and be right in order, or you could choose a phase five food, or heck, you could even choose an illegal SE food. It doesn't matter, because you'll know right away whether or not that bugs your feel-good zone. You'll know right away whether it agrees with you or doesn't agree with you by doing the four-day test. So the phases were built based on order of ease of digestion. So if you're being really cautious and you want to take it super slow, continue to follow those and just go right in order like we've designed for you. We find that for, I don't know, 50 to 60% of people, once they get to their feel-good zone, a lot of times that's 60 to 90 days into the diet. And like Jordan said, you're a little bit more, you have at least some foods from the first three phases, and you're really looking to kind of diversify because you're like, all right, man, all my symptoms are gone. Now what's next? Okay, well, let's try eating some cooler stuff. And that's usually where people get a little anxious. And so we just want to impress upon people that you could do it the safer way. Or if that becomes you, if you're that person who wants to reach ahead, as long as you're in that zone and you can know if a test goes good or bad, then that's the reason why the timeline goes out the window. So I think I just confused everyone again. So maybe we should just skip on to the next question.
All right. I've got a great question lined up next. It's from Merle. It's a two-parter. So I'm going to kick the first part to you and see what your thoughts are. He says, I've done the stomach acid test as prescribed with no results. Bummer. I'm on prednisone now and have been for over 2 years. My current dosage is at 10 milligrams per day and trying to wean off, but by the time I get below 10 milligrams, I have terrible BMs. I know the recommendation is not to take the betaine HCL while being on prednisone. I understand that definitely means not trying it until it burns and then backing off, but what about one pill with a protein-rich meal? Will that help? What's the chances of developing ulcers from a low dose? After I'm able to wean off the prednisone, how long should I wait till trying the betaine HCL? Is it safe to take betaine HCL while on Remicade, a TNF blocker, immune system suppressant? So that was quite a bit of stuff, man. Let's see what you got.
Okay, yeah. So let's first start off with the disclaimer, right, about betaine HCL and corticosteroids or, you know, for example, prednisone. So the risk factors to be aware of with betaine HCL, and this is right from Dr. Jonathan Wright's book, Why Stomach Acid is Good for You. It's a great read if you want to look into it more. I urge everyone to pick that book up. So this is a quote right from the book. HCL supplements should never be taken by anyone who is also using any kind of anti-inflammatory medication such as corticosteroids, prednisone, aspirin, ibuprofen such as Motrin, Advil, or any other NSAIDs. There's a couple more quotes here. These drugs can damage the GI lining that supplementary HCL might aggravate and increase the risk of gastric bleeding or ulcer. Although he does go on later to state, there are occasions when the risk related to HCL replacement may be higher than we would like. In these cases, as long as the potential benefit outweighs the risk, I may still recommend the treatment. Okay, so let me break this down a little bit further and go into what I just rambled off at you. And that is, the key part here is that the HCL doesn't cause the gastric bleeding or the ulcers. In fact, that's actually what the corticosteroids often do. But the HCL does aggravate those once they start. So if you don't feel like you have any damage to your GI lining, Dr. Wright states that there are occasions when he would just go ahead and do the HCL replacement therapy, even though the risk is a little bit higher because you are on the prednisone. So it's a decision you'll have to make, and a lot of times it's best discussed with your doctor before you go ahead. But I realize, you know, that that's not always the environment that everyone is in. So in this case, what we normally say is that basically just start slow, like you said, and kind of ramp into it. And you talked about possibly, you know, don't go until it burns, and what about if I just take one pill with a protein-rich meal? Is that going to help? And I would say that it possibly is going to help, but you're already at a risk, right, with prednisone or any other corticosteroid to take BTNHL. So one pill technically is about as much risk as two pills or three pills because we always get to the law of diminishing returns as far as risk goes. So going till it burns is not going to cause any long-term damage or any lasting damage, and you do need to find your proper dosage. So if you do choose to use the betaine HCL with the prednisone, I would encourage you to actually find your ideal betaine HCL dosage. So go up, continue upping the dosage at each protein-rich meal until you find the burn, back off one, and then supplement with that at all protein-rich meals. And the reason why I say that is that might be the missing piece for you to taper off that 10 milligrams of prednisone. So if you can get to a pretty good feel-good zone or get to where your BMs are really solid, you get on the betaine and things get even better, then I would look to taper off that prednisone right away. And then you ask kind of if you do choose to wait, how long, and you're able to wean off the prednisone, how long should you wait? That's just kind of a matter. I mean, technically with the drug half-life, the prednisone should probably be out of your body in like 4 to 6 days. Again, I'm not an expert or a doctor on this, so if you wanted to wait like 5 to 10 days before you started it, I think that should be fine. And then you asked, is it safe to take betaine HCL while on Remicade, which is a TNF blocker? And this is, as far as I know, again, I'm not a doctor and I haven't studied these drugs in depth, but this should be completely fine. It's not a corticosteroid. It's not increasing the risk of any bleeding or damaging your stomach lining at all. Instead, it's working on the immune system. So it's a totally different drug, totally different mechanism in which way it works, and you should be totally fine with betaine HCL on Remicade. So, again, I don't know if I confused everybody. There was a lot of little questions and nuances in that. But if you're at 10 milligrams, you tried to wean off a couple times, I think you're kind of a prime candidate to give BTNHCL a try. We've had quite a few people who've done that sort of thing, and it's worked out pretty well. But again, there's risks that we talked about. So take those as a warning and just progress from there.
That was good. And I think the only thing I'll add is that, you know, if you have a history of gastric bleeding or a history of ulcers, you know, you might want to be more cautious about testing it because, you know, obviously taking a corticosteroid for 2 years can really have a huge impact on aggravating your GI lining. If you really want peace of mind, your doctor can do something like endoscopy. We can go in and actually take some gastric biopsies really quick. It's a pretty harmless procedure if they're just going through the mouth, and that'll give you real point of view from your doctor saying, yes, you have, you know, gastritis, which is inflammation of the GI lining, or yes, you have ulcers, or no, you don't. And betaine's probably not going to aggravate anything because there's nothing there to aggravate. That's the best way to get peace of mind. Otherwise, when you're testing the betaine, you can really, you know, if you make that decision, hopefully with your doctor, you can really just be cognizant and be aware of any gastric bleeding symptoms or symptoms of ulcers and the pain related to that. So that's all I got. I think we're ready to rock on to the next one. What do you think, man?
Yeah, let's keep running with it. Thanks for adding that last piece. That's big.
All right, cool. The second piece is, I've started the 5-day Stop My Flare diet and still no progress. BMs are still at 6s and 7s on the chart. The only thing I have not added is prozymes and not as much oils yet because of not having enzymes. My prozymes arrived today as they were out of stock, so I'm hoping to see some results by the end of the week. Is this a reasonable expectation? What changes in BMs do you generally hear about once people add in the prozymes?
Yes, that's the big answer here. We've seen this before lots of times, actually. The prozymes will usually help immensely right away, especially when you're on the 5-day diet and you're eating that much protein and fat. So if you're struggling in any way to break down the proteins or the fat content, the enzymes are going to just pop right in there and start to support you, and I would assume you'll start seeing changes the first day you start taking them and definitely by the third day if you don't start notice it right away. Some of the changes you might see right away is the change in stools, at least improving closer to that 4 to 5 range on the Bristol chart. The next thing you should notice is that the frequency of how often you're going, which sounds like kind of an issue for you, that should go down right away. If you introduce the prozymes and things, none of these changes that I just talked about, they don't happen or they improve a little bit but not really that great, then I think it would be another notch in the chart as far as, yes, it's probably time to try some BTNHCL. So when you exhaust all the other options that we've talked about, you know, you're doing the 5-day diet, you're doing probiotics, you're doing prozymes, the last big step there in the feel-good blueprint is the BTNHCL. And even though the risk factor is a little bit higher, as long as your history doesn't prevent you from giving them a try, I think at that point you'd be a perfect candidate to try it. So I don't know if I missed anything, Jordan, but let me know if I did.
Oh, that was good, man. I think, you know, we've had people struggle with the 5-day diet, and the first thing, you know, like you said, prozymes, and then the next would be betaine. And then I guess the only other final thing, I've had a couple of people that have tried it, that tried all those things, and it still didn't work, and it ended up that they needed to use a different veggie. They were having problems with squash and a little bit of problem with carrots, so they ended up actually switching over to like a cucumber or zucchini, and that did the trick for them. So that's kind of the bottom on the list, but just wanted to throw that out there in case someone else is still struggling after they do all those other things.
Good stuff, man. Yeah, that's the big key, after you do all those other things, because that's just playing with the minutia, but once you get through that list of things to do, that minutia might make the world of the difference. So. All right, so let's roll on. We got a big multi-parter here from Audra. To start, she says, hi, I've been on SCD for 3 months, but just recently achieved my feel-good zone by eliminating the four horsemen. So great work tweaking. That's awesome results. I've started to add back eggs, and I think it's going okay. I'm on day 3, but I didn't have a BM today, and I'm feeling a bit gassy, bloated. Do I assume that the gassiness and bloating is being caused by the eggs since nothing else has changed? Is this reason enough to avoid them longer?
Okay. I'll take a shot at it, and you can help me out after I'm all finished up. So that's hard to say. You know, that's kind of a gray zone. I'd have to say, I'd say keep eating them. I would keep eating them for the fourth day and then see how the fourth day goes. And then maybe even a fifth day just to get really positive results from your change. If you continue to experience the gas and bloating, then you'd probably want to test removing them back again. The important thing to know is that, you know, we never really experience just one day of symptoms and then make a decision from that. So, for example, if you try a new food for one day and then something off happens, that's not a good enough evidence to stop that food. You need to keep doing it for the full day, you know, fourth day and even sometimes the fifth day, just to really understand what is actually happening to your body. Because it could just be you had an off day. You didn't get enough sleep. You know, you had a stressful event, something like that. So, you know, keep going there. However, you know, if you test eggs again and for example, if you have horrible diarrhea 4 to 6 hours after breakfast, 2 days in a row, and nothing else has changed, it's likely going to be something that you need to take out for a while. Or if your case, you know, if you have horrible cramping and gas again for day 4 and day 5, then it's probably something you'll want to take back out again for a while.
All right, I think you killed that one, so I don't really have much to add there. So let's move on to our next question anyways. Also, I still have foods with the 4-day timeline, even though I'm in my feel-good zone, and that's question mark. So I think she's asking, is that what she should still be doing?
You know, that's like a gray area too, and we talked about it earlier, right? I mean, you know, if you're in your feel-good zone, I think the 4-day rule, and Steve said it, the 4-day rule still applies for sure. You know what you're eating right now is great and that you feel great and you're happy with your BMs and your energy level, and otherwise you wouldn't be considered in your feel-good zone. So that's when you can start adding new foods, and you should be able to tolerate them, you know, much better because you've got some good healing going on. You know, the one caveat to this is the Four Horsemen. The Four Horsemen are a little different because of how reactive they are. So you probably haven't really handled all your leaky gut, even though you're in the feel-good zone. So you may, you know, you definitely need to still use the 4-day rule, especially with the Four Horsemen. However, if you're talking about, you know, moving up the phasing charts or trying new fruits and veggies, maybe some coffee, then, you know, you could probably do 3 days or 2 days and just see how it goes. But definitely the 4-day is priority when you're using the Four Horsemen, and even 5 days in some cases.
Yeah, and the only thing I'd add to that is if you're still working your way through phases 1 and 2, or if you've been on the diet less than 90 days, always stick to the 4-day rule. I mean, you're still very new to the healing process. You're still very new in the diet. And, you know, many people talk, including Elaine, talks about like a 90-day setback or 90 to 100-day setback. So, you know, things, just because things turned out really great in the first 2 weeks, or maybe it's the 4 weeks since you've been on the diet, be prepared that things aren't always going to go up in a linear straight line to better health, and so keeping with the 4-day rule is probably the best bet at that point.
Yes, thanks for adding that, man. That was a good point.
Okay, sweet. So let's keep rolling on. She's got some more questions here. How long should I be in the feel-good zone before I start adding the Four Horsemen back? It'll be 2 weeks tomorrow that I've been symptom-free. So this is kind of an extension of the last one, man.
Yeah, and as I said, you know, in the previous one, I'd focus first on adding, you know, really expanding out your diet before you look at the Four Horsemen. You know, adding in more fruits and veggies, moving up the phasing charts, just really getting a good array of foods that you know are keeping you in your feel-good zone. So say in another few weeks after you've introduced more of the phases of foods, actually probably say 4 weeks. It takes you 4 weeks to move up, you know, 2 more phases, and you've got a good array of foods. Then maybe you can start testing the Four Horsemen. But in general, I'd argue that you need to be in your feel-good zone at least 30 days with very easy introduction of new foods. That is a good sign that you could test them. But like Steve said, in the first 90 days, you need to be really cautious. So if you're after 90 days, it's probably more of a green light. But definitely 30 days. Just be careful. You know, you don't want to force yourself into a setback. We've just seen that so often. It really crushes people. It's really, really depressing.
Yep, that's what I'd say as well. So she has one more question here. She just stopped a four-week round of Entacor enemas, and she wants to know, should I avoid adding foods until I know that I'm symptom-free without the enemas?
Yeah, with anything like that, I would say generally waiting a week or so after stopping meds that you've been doing for a while. It might be a good idea to even think about falling back in your food safe zone, which is that really core group of foods that you know make you feel good no matter what. Then focus on easing back into things. Just remember that there's always going to be some backlash when you remove something like that because your body's got to go back to a new homeostasis. So, you know, even in the end, you might feel 100 times better than when you were taking them, but the first few days that you stop taking them, you might actually feel worse, and that's okay, and you can expect that and just ride it out, and that's why I say falling back in your food safe zone during that maybe first couple of days of backlash might be a good idea, but you know, who knows? You might not experience that at all. You might actually just experience awesomeness after you take it out. So it really depends on what happens there, but definitely think about, you know, at least waiting a week.
Yeah, I would definitely go with that as well. You haven't seen the training yet, Audra. We'll go into it more in depth later in the course. But anytime you come off of any sort of prescription drug, and this goes to anybody on prednisone, on any Remicade, Aircor, any of these things, and you're trying to taper off the last little bit, expect generally to get worse as soon as you come off. Just like when you started the SCD diet, you got a little worse in the beginning. So expect the homeostasis to change and then level back off in 7 to 14 days. So if you don't have any symptoms and everything stays awesome, that's great. But keeping everything kind of still and steady and maybe even dialing back a little bit for the first 5 to 10 days when you back off a prescription drug is usually the best way to avoid any problems.
So. Awesome. Awesome wrap-up. Well, that does it for our pre-submitted questions. So we've got a little bit of time here. So we want to open it up and take some live Q&A from those of you that are here. So like I said earlier, go to the questions box in the GoToWebinar area there and go ahead and type us any questions you have, any additional questions on what we covered tonight or just any general questions on the diet or the first 2 weeks of the course. Let us know, and we will start going through them one by one. Steve, while we're waiting for questions, man, did you have any other kind of lingering thoughts after some of the emails we've been getting from the first 2 weeks of the course?
That's a good question. I think I do want to return back to that prednisone, that 10 milligram thing. You know, that is so common, seriously. There's so many people out there who are riding right at that 10 milligrams, and every time they try to step down off of them, they see a flare in symptoms, and they immediately jump back on it. And I think that one thing that I want those people to know and want those people to hear is that when you follow our feel-good blueprint and you get all of those foods ready and you're doing the 5-day diet or derivative close to it, you've seen some healing and you're on the proper digestive supplements we talk about, which is the probiotics, the HCL, and the enzymes, that it's probably the time then to taper off of it and push through any setbacks. So, again, expect the setbacks. Expect things to get worse. Now, if you go into a full, almost full flare, then maybe, okay, time to dial it back. But you've got to get the drug out of your system, and you've got to give your body, your natural systems, time to rebuild themselves because they've been shut off by that steroid for a long time now. So it's going to take more than just a day or 5 days for them to start up. So that's where we talk about the 2 weeks. Give yourself 2 weeks to get off it, and if things are just not going that well, then maybe look at going back on it. But most people will find if they can overcome the fear of the setback that they've had a couple times and just push through that. When they have the proper supplements, the proper digestive supplements in place, they're using some derivative of a 5-day diet or some sort of feel-good zone or food-safe zone, usually they can get right through that. And it's pretty cool when people are actually able to push through that and get off it.
That was good, man. That was huge value. Thanks for doing that. We're starting to get a couple of questions here. I want to kick you this first one from Audra. She says, just started taking betaine HCL. I did the baking soda test for 3 days with no belching, but even with one pill, I'm feeling a bit of burning. Should I continue with it?
Cool. Good question, Audra. Okay, so two things come to mind here when I think about this. The first thing is I'd want to know how much HCL is in each pill. If you're using a pill, which a lot of them are either 600 to 700 milligrams per pill, or at least 500 to 700 milligrams per pill, and then there's another group of them that are like 250 to 350 milligrams per pill. So if you're using one of the heavier pills that's like 600 milligrams or something, I would encourage you to try to find a brand that has the 250 to 300 milligrams and try that. But before you go out and spend any more money on the HCL, what I would encourage you to make sure you're doing is that encourage you to make sure you're getting at least 20 grams of protein when you take it. So if you took it with like a couple pieces of fruit and some veggies and like a couple pieces of meat or a bunch of fat, like avocado and some fruit, a lot of people will see burning with that. So you really, it's really important to get protein at every meal that you're going to supplement with betaine-HCL. And you want to get at least 20 grams. And so 20 grams, just for reference, is going to be usually at least four ounces. Sometimes with fish and stuff, it'll be 6 ounces of meat per serving, like, you know, like at least four eggs, that type of thing. So make sure the protein is high enough at the meal. Otherwise, you will get burning. And then if the dosage of the pill is pretty high, try backing down to a lower dose pill. Jordan, you got anything to add on that?
No, that was good. She did say that it was a 500-milligram pill, and I would just say, you know, if I just have a small piece of salmon or something at a meal, I do not need my betaine. My upper limit changes definitely depending on how much protein I'm eating. So if you ate a meal that was really heavy in protein and you took one and still had burning, then I might look at trying to understand if you do have some gastritis, maybe some damage to your GI lining, something like that, if you're already getting burning at a really protein-heavy meal. So that would be something to look at also.
Okay, good stuff, man. Well, we got a comment in here from Meyer. I know I'm probably butchering your name again. Sorry about that, man.
So I think it's Merle. Merle? Merle.
Okay, yeah, that's not an I, that's an L. My bad, Merle. So after starting the Prozymes, he upped from one this afternoon to two this evening, and he's thinking he might be able to see the difference already because he hasn't had a BM since this morning. So he says we'll see the difference tomorrow. So that's really cool, man. I think you're right on the right track there. And then he asks this cool follow-up question that we haven't addressed yet, which is good to have your wisdom on, Jordan, which is, should he be taking the Prozymes at the beginning, middle, or the end of the meal?
That's a good question. Usually what we generally see is recommended is to take the betaine before the meal and the enzymes after the meal. But to be honest, I have tested all of that, and I haven't seen a big difference. Now, if I wait like 15, 20 minutes after my meal and take everything, that tends to notice that it doesn't work as well. But to be honest, I've gotten really lazy over the last couple of years, and I still take a little betaine and Prozymes with every meal. Sometimes I take it before the meal. Sometimes I take all of it after the meal. So really, I haven't personally seen a big difference, but I think the general rule is betaine before, enzymes after, but that's just what I've seen. But I personally don't see a big difference. Steve, do you?
You know, the logic says that technically the order in which the body's processes would happen is that the enzymes would be released later on once the food moves into the small intestine. And that's why they say take them at the end of the meal. But just like Jordan, I've tested popping them 10 minutes before a meal and even up to 30 minutes after a meal. And it's not till like the 30-minute mark where I've ever really noticed any difference. I honestly have taken them several times, 10 to 15 minutes after a meal and find no difference, and taken them well before a meal or right before a meal and actually find no difference. So, again, I'm kind of lazy, and since the testing hasn't produced any results that would indicate that it's bad to do it, I just take everything in one handful, usually either – you know, if I think about it, I'll take it at the beginning of the meal. If I don't think about it, I take it at the end of the meal, just wherever. I just keep all the pills together so that way I don't miss any.
All right. Steven's got a question here. He says, I'm taking ZenPrep enzymes for pancreatitis. Is that the same as the enzymes you were talking about? And I think I looked into this before with you, Steven. I believe that I looked at ZenPrep, and it seemed like it was mostly derivations of proteases. I would have to look into it more and follow up with you in an email, but I believe that when I looked at it, I thought it would be good if you supplemented still with the GI ProHealth Prozymes because it seemed to be more of a diverse digestive enzyme mix that helped out with many other things, you know, along with just what ZenPrep was providing. ZenPrep is just a prescription strength enzyme. So I would test, you know, adding it in. I've seen a lot of doctors that actually will have people take enzymes between meals, not to help with digestion, but to help repair and restore the cell lining of, you know, the GI tract. So taking both together is probably not going to hurt. Always check with your doctor if it's something you want to talk with them about. But it's probably not going to hurt. It's probably only going to help to have more diverse enzymes. I think in the body we produce, you know, dozens of, if not, I don't even know the number, but we produce a lot of enzymes and variations of enzymes based on what we're eating. So I would say test it, man. It's probably not going to hurt.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. So, you know, it's a $30 test, which $30 is nothing to scoff at, but if it means the end of your symptoms because of that one change, I think it's worth it.
He says, better info than my doctor gave. Thanks. Awesome, Steven. Well, hopefully you'll test it and let us know how it goes. Love to hear from you, man. I, like I said, I'll follow up with you in the email, but it should be some good info. Merle asks, what's your opinion about Kangen water? I have no idea what Kangen water is. Do you, Steve?
No. No idea. So, Merle, maybe you can tell us what it is because I don't know what it is.
I remember reading about what was that water that Matt from Natural Digestive Healing had talked about? Was that, do you remember the name of that?
That was Elite, which is just a SC legal like sports drink. It's not actually a water. It's just it comes in packets and you mix it in, kind of like a pre-mixed Gatorade or something like that. So.
Okay.
Okay, well, Merle, if you want to send us an email about it, kind of write up what it is, and we'll get back to you. But I think the worst type of water is distilled water because it's devoid of any minerals and all ions and that kind of thing. And so there's some science that might suggest that by taking in water like that, it might upset the balances a little bit, but.
So it looks like he added that it's a slightly alkaline water. I don't know if that helps you at all.
No, honestly, I'd have to research it. So.
Okay, all right. Well, we can look into that for sure and follow up. Looks like that's all the questions we have. I'm going to take last call on questions if anybody has any more questions to send in while we're here. I guess while we're waiting, did you have anything to wrap up with, Steve?
No, I just want to say everybody's doing a great job. Keep testing and keep letting us know how you're doing. If you're not getting the results that you're looking for, and if you are getting the results that you're looking for, I mean, send us an email. Let us know because, you know, we sit back here and we develop these courses and we've tested this material on lots of other people, but you're a brand new group of students for us and a brand new group of people with fresh problems and stuff. So we don't know if you're doing well and we don't know if you're doing bad. So finding out either way is both encouragement and work for us to help you get better. So please keep in contact with us and let us know both ways.
Excellent, man. So it's
How
been
about
a good.
You, man? Do you have anything?
Yeah, it's been a good Q&A. I think everybody's doing a great job so far. You know, the biggest thing is when you're going through the first week and second week of material is start testing, start tweaking. You know, make some changes based on what you're learning. Test some different foods, test some supplementation, because that's the only way you're going to start feeling better. That's the only way you're going to start controlling your symptoms. And through, you know, finding the right tweaks for you, finding your custom version of SCD, your personalized supplementation, by doing those things, you're going to start taking control of your health. But you have to do them. You have to take action and pick one thing and test it. So everybody that was submitting questions is submitting questions because they're doing tweaks, they're testing things, and that's awesome. So great work. Keep it up. Keep going through the course and testing something every week, at least one thing, and let us know how it goes. Love to hear from you and love to hear how things are going. Alrighty, well, thank you so much. This has been the bonus Q&A session of the Advanced SCD Techniques course. I'm Jordan Reisner, and I've been here tonight with Stephen Wright.